we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, we're joined by Michael Lebedzinski, a father in the Springford Area School District over in Montgomery County, who's been a member of the core group fighting for school normalcy. As a data guy, Mike brings a particularly analytical perspective to that group, something which I can certainly relate to. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Josh. Good to be here.
So tell me, you're in Springford over in Montgomery County. I lovingly refer to Montgomery County as China right now when it comes to COVID stuff. It's a lot better now, right? It's not too bad. You guys back to normal?
Yeah, I would say pretty much back to normal. It does seem like it took an awfully long time to normalize, and it's been quite a journey.
What has that journey been like? I mean, first off, tell me, how did you become involved in all this? Right now, you're kind of one of the main people I'm aware of who are like really fighting, going to school board meetings, writing emails, yeah, all this stuff in either Bucks or Montgomery. How did that start for you?
So I think in the beginning of the pandemic, I wasn't as focused on schools. But I remember back, you know, in the February, March 2020, it just really struck me about the magnitude of the reaction to what seemed like, while it was a novel virus, it's a respiratory virus. And we have a very solid understanding, more than a century's understanding of respiratory viruses. So I was just confounded by the enormity of the reaction. And that's really where I started getting into learning more about, you know, what are coronaviruses, you know, what is COVID? You know, this is all, of course, before the vaccines, but just trying to understand, you know, what is a PCR test, and just trying to soak up as much knowledge as I could. I think really looking back, just in an effort to try to understand and rationalize this, the enormity of the reaction, it just seemed very outsized for what we actually knew at the time. And, you know, as you said in the intro, I'm trained as an engineer, and so things need to tie out for me. So I need to understand, you know, what is the data underlying this that could really explain this? And things just weren't matching up.
Well, that's your first problem. You're supposed to trust the experts, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think I'm a naturally trusting person until something doesn't make sense. And then I start to ask what I would consider reasonable questions. So, you know, most of my interest was really focused on, you know, COVID-19 and SARS-CoV-2 and the government response and the lockdowns and just how that was all being handled. It really wasn't until the summer of 2020 that I started getting involved from the school perspective. Had some friends in the district who encouraged me to attend the school board meetings and asked for help you know, just educating others on what I had learned, you know, the data that I was seeing. You know, I think early in the pandemic, we didn't know much, and it was probably prudent to, you know, some of the restrictions, sure, that were, yeah, put in place, you know, for that school year. I remember there were kids in our neighborhood who didn't have graduation, who didn't have prom, and they missed out on things. And it was very emotional for them because those are once in a lifetime activities, right? It's not like, well, I'll just go to prom next year, I'll just graduate next year, right? That was one in a lifetime.
And the
that
milestones,
they,
you know, kind of rite of passage type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when the school board started discussing what reopening in the fall of 2020, and the reaction and the way they were discussing it was just
over the top,
completely over the top for what we were seeing at that time. So yeah, even in the fall of 2020, it was still, you know, lockdowns, it was still virtual. And at that time we were just starting to see the emergence of how this lockdown and how this virtual education was affecting children. And it was just frightening to myself and many, many other parents in the district that the school was putting such an emphasis on the fear over this virus and being completely ignorant and head in the sand on the actual impact that we were seeing on a daily basis to,
like,
to
the
kids.
The damage they were causing. There was no balance. There was no awareness of what how much damage was being caused.
Correct. It was a complete myopia on the virus itself.
Like, do everything you can, whatever we can, throw the kitchen sink at it, regardless of what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. And and what was particularly frightening about that is there was the kitchen sink was being thrown at a problem for which we had very little data to show that there was actually a problem in that age group.
Well, another aspect of it, that this is why I like having the data conversations that you and I have had and looking at the science. I think a real fundamental issue of how all this was allowed to happen by school boards, people mm-hmm. who are generally untrained when it comes to these issues, epidemiology and public health and whatever, is I think these people genuinely, truly in their hearts believed that you could, like, neutralize a respiratory virus with masks, cloth masks, or right. by having the kids sit 6 feet apart rather than 3 feet apart. I think they, you know, public health in America was so good at selling this idea that, like, well, it's all a layered, whatever, Swiss right. cheese layered model. Right. All you got to do is do all these things and, like, no one will get COVID. And obviously, like, those of us who were at the time already starting to question it, we had already seen all of that crumble mm-hmm. and understood that none of this is doing jack. Right. This is really not accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
So it's tough to look back and think through all that, because it's really hard not to be frustrated knowing that they were just desperate to do something, really, is what it was. They just wanted to do stuff, fight COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. It was take any action, even though the action wasn't reasoned, even though the action wasn't backed by data. I mean, I literally went to every school board meeting and presented data every single time. And I made the point every single time to say, this is not my data. This is data from the Montgomery County Board of Health. This is data from the Pennsylvania Department of Health. This is data from studies, you know, and I tended to cite studies that were prior to COVID, because, you know, we saw what happened with the amount of research dollars that were going into people who were writing COVID friendly research.
They were the only ones who got the
funding. Yep, exactly. So you're going to have a predetermined outcome there.
And there's one thing, you know, when we talk about data and studies and reading all of that, and obviously big data is and should be what's used to guide big decisions like this, but there's also the anecdotal impact that when you talk to people, you can't discredit. What was the impact to you? Like, for you and your child's experience in school at that point, when you're talking about going back to school or not going back to school in fall of 2020, was a lot of your opinion, was that being driven by what you were observing yourself?
It was driven by what I was observing, but to be honest, you know, our children adjusted pretty well to the restrictions. You know, they were able to get through virtual. And I think, you know, quite honestly, that's a point that I think is missed on a lot of people who, you know, in Springfield's a fairly affluent district. So when you have kids staying home, there might already be a parent in the home during the day. And they might already have a guest bedroom or an office room, and they might already have high-speed bandwidth. But what I felt consistently was missed by Montgomery County Commissioners, Val Arcouche and Ken Lawrence in particular, is that they didn't really consider the impact on children who maybe both of their parents work and now they're home alone, or they don't have broadband access, or the pull of just, you know, running outside and going down the street to the basketball court to play basketball when they should be doing their work. There wasn't enough emphasis on that. You know, they crow all the time about health equity and all of these other platitudes, but when it comes down to actually acting on it, they were just fine with the Norristown Area School District being virtual for almost 2 years straight. And, you know, that there was certainly an outsized impact on certain demographics that we didn't feel as much in Springfield. Certainly, you know, sections of Springfield, I'm sure, felt that. But, you know, that's what really kept me involved. And you know, obviously, you know, you're very familiar with this, that being involved takes a lot of time. And it's, you know, sometimes it's, you know, a personal sacrifice. So, you know, I ended up staying involved because, you know, I felt all of this time that I had amassed in learning and understanding how the science actually works, you know, I felt a need to kind of give that back and be able to help other people understand that. And, you know, I constantly got questions from people, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? You know, what is the data telling you about this? And I've never proclaimed myself to be an epidemiologist or a virologist, but I am pretty good with reading comprehension. And, you know, these studies do have technical words, but I'm a technical person. And you know, a lot of it is pretty easy to figure out once you read it and kind of connect the dots between various studies.
Yeah. When it comes to your knowledge and your ability to, you know, interact with people and say, look, let's just tell me if you agree, disagree, let's talk about this. How has that worked for you when it comes to your school district? And like, for example, your school board, when you were starting to share your views and the data, did they absorb it, you know, or was it kind of like, because I feel like a lot of people who go up to public comment at school board meetings or who send emails, there was so much noise all along that school board directors kind of just cut out a lot of it. So I'm curious, you know, what you think got through.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say the response and the level of absorption varied across board members. You know, some board members just had their heels dug in. They had a position, and you know, come hell or high water, that was the position, regardless of what the data actually said. You know, and then we had other board members who, you know, they had a view on things, but they were open to listening. I recall back in June of 21, when the cases were coming down significantly, we only had, I think, 3 or 4 days left of school. And it was, you know, it was a tough year for the kids. And there was a motion made to go mask optional for the last few days of the year. And there was a lot of discussion, well, you know, what's the big deal with 3 days? But it was really symbolic for the kids to know that they could start their summer vacation knowing that they had some bit of freedom. And there was one particular board member, I remember, who thought about it and actually did look at the data and said, hey, the cases are super low. I think the risk is really low here. And she had changed her vote from what it had been previously. So I think there's good examples there. There's others who just, they don't understand the science. They just blindly trust what they're hearing, even in the face of overwhelming data to the contrary. And you know, within our district, we've been lucky that we haven't had any serious hospitalizations. We've had lots of cases, but you know, I've talked a lot about mass psychosis and, you know, this fascination with cases. And even though I've constantly explained to the school board that a case is not really a case. A case is just detection of viral material. It's not, you know, they don't understand simple things like the PCR test only detects the presence of the viral material. It does not diagnose an infection. Only a healthcare professional can diagnose an infection. So simple things like that, they would be fixated on cases. And, you know, a lot of times they really just didn't understand, you know, the level to which the manipulation at the government level was occurring and why certain policies were put in place. You know, we know this about hospitals that with incidental COVID, right? We see the number of, you know, quote, hospitalizations from COVID, but there's really a distinction between with COVID and from COVID that really hasn't been, you know, sifted in many, many states. So, you know, they look at the data and, you know, it's scary, but then when you explain that over the course of what is now three seasons, there still have been fewer COVID deaths among kids 0 to 17 as there was in one season back in 2017, 2018 of influenza. They just can't wrap their heads around that.
Right.
So, and then if they can't wrap their heads around it, they're not going to make a decision based on it.
It sure has been frustrating, but I feel like as time has gone along, we've had so many examples of kind of being proven right. Let's go with what you were just talking about, the, you know, with COVID or from COVID in the hospital setting. Well, that was a talking point that reopened people were in summer of 2020. We were running around with talking about that everywhere. Yep. And then it wouldn't be until, I feel like, honestly, this past fall, what, a year and some change later or more, that finally you start to see states actually study that, hospitals, systems, clearly not here. You're not going to see it here, but in other places in the country, they start releasing that information. Yep. And oh, gee golly, those crazy reopeners were absolutely right. There have been so many examples of that, that it's like the world just basically has to catch up to learning that, look, this is a respiratory coronavirus. Get used to living with it. You want your vaccine, take your vaccine. You want to wear a protective mask for yourself, do that. But there ain't nothing but going back to life here. There's no other way out of it.
Yeah, it's almost like a religion. I often try to identify and understand, you know, how the other team was or how the other side was thinking from their perspective. And it was really a lot of just whatever we're told, that's what we do, even though we're not going to ask any questions. We're not going to apply any critical thinking. You know, we're just going to accept, you know, whatever the gospel is from whatever we're being told. And, you know, even when presented with facts, I always go back to back in April of 2020, the National Vital Statistics Group, which is a government agency under the, I guess, HHS or Department of Health, they literally changed the definition for death certificate reporting. How does that happen?
Yep.
I mean, how do you change death certificate reporting that's been, you know, a common standard for decades? And now, you know, a lot of people weren't aware of that, but you could see how it inflated the numbers. And then now, lo and behold, we're seeing adjustments in the death count based on, you know, that is it OCD or ECD coding, whatever the EMR coding system is, you know, but no one wanted to talk about that for a year and a half. And then all of a sudden it's being adjusted and we see all kinds of case counts being adjusted. And yeah, the I told you so just doesn't seem appropriate with all these adjustments, but it is somewhat vindicating, I would say.
Vindicating. That's a good word for it. Cause it's, yeah. You know, when nobody really knew what was going on, you have to respect people's decisions. Like I definitely see that, but it got to a point where the harms really outweighed.
Yeah. Yeah. In the spring of 2020, you know, the first phase of the pandemic, I was doing my own research and formulating questions, but I pretty much trusted, you know, continued to trust the school board and the Department of Health because we didn't know a whole lot then. But then you start to get into September or August when we reopen. Within Springfield, we have a tradition that the seniors have a senior tailgate the very first day of their senior year because it's the last first day of the year for them, right? They're not going to have any more first days. And amazingly, the board said, no, we're not going to allow that. We're not going to sponsor it. So it was, you know, it was a scene right out of Footloose. You know, the kids got together and they said, hey, this is really important to us. We don't want to be missing these important events, these milestones in our life. So they asked their parents, you know, is there any way we can do this? And of course the parents want to help out, right? That's what parents do. So we called one of the parents called the township and asked if we could use the community park, right? It's outdoors. And we even enforced social distancing and masking. And, you know, it created a lot of controversy because the board had said, we can't do this. The parents and the kids said, we can do it. We can do it safely. And sure enough, we did. And it was a fun event. The kids enjoyed it. They were all, you know, they followed the rules and there were no issues. No infections resulted from that event. And so I think that's one example of several where, you know, the narrative is so dug in that, you know, they didn't want anyone to be able to prove that the narrative was wrong.
Exactly.
Right. So, yeah. I have passed your graph, your mask and non-mask mandate graph around so much to people to show them visually. And nobody wanted anyone to believe that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yep. Because as soon as you have someone who's bucking the system successfully and safely, then the mass starts to say, well, wait a minute. If they're doing it safely, then why are we all continuing to mask, right? So that's why a lot of the red states, right, they were trying to lock them down and they were trying to, you know, conformity, right? We saw that in the beginning of this current school year within the Department of Education and the Department of Health,
after
right?
After months of saying school boards are going to do it in their own local districts and then, oh, wait, you're not doing the right thing. So we need Big Daddy government needs to swoop in from Harrisburg.
Yep.
Make it all the same.
Yeah, right. Because that's, you know, God forbid if someone actually has a critical thought and analyzes something and takes a decision and, you know, if they're successful, right, then a whole lot of questions are going to come up. I think, you know, thinking back to this past holiday season, I forget who the scientist was, but they said that Omicron was the vaccine that we had wished we had developed or wished we had created. I think it was actually John Campbell out of the UK. But I think Omicron was a game changer. I mean, you know, if you think without Omicron, Delta would still be prevalent. And, you know, I think things would be a lot different now. Honestly, do. I don't think there would be as much natural infection because it would be less transmissible. And I think with so many people getting infected over last Christmas, many, many, many of them being fully vaccinated. You know, I know people who religiously masked with N95 and were vaccinated and boosted and social distance, and they still got infected over Christmas. So when, you know, that was kind of the breaking point where they start to, that's where the light bulb goes off and they say, wow, maybe I should really think about all these presumptions I've had when I've done all the things that I'm told to protect me from the thing that literally just happened to me, right? I think that set off a lot of critical thinking in people's heads. And of course, it imparted a massive amount of natural immunity. But yeah, it's
been, you had mentioned earlier, like the religious aspect, the religiosity of it. Mm-hmm. That was always so fascinating to me when people who did literally everything they could ever do to mitigate, including being triple or quadruple vaxxed,
right,
they'd come down with COVID. You would inevitably see them, just like a religion, they would presume sin upon themselves. And there would, right, be like this shameful acceptance of, what have I done? Like, I must have done, right, something wrong. It, right, was that one time I took my mask off. Like, yeah, you just, everybody, look, it don't matter what you believe, there is a reality. And the reality is this virus will forever be with us.
Yeah.
So prepare for it. Get healthy, get a vaccine, do whatever you got to do. But that virus is out there. It's influenza. It's anything else.
Yeah. You mentioned about getting healthy. That was one of the other things that struck me over the last 2 years is, when was the last time you ever heard the FDA or the CDC promote good health, promote exercise, promote eating well, promote, you know, getting your vitamins and minerals? It was never about, how do I strengthen my immune system? It was always, take this pill, take this injection. And I have to be honest with you, when I see the few times I do watch TV, I never really paid attention to the fine print and the voice behind the scene in a drug commercial. And now with COVID, I start to kind of tune into that. And you start to listen to all of these serious adverse reactions from these drugs that they're required to announce during the commercial. And you think, wow, that's, you know, now that's something that I really have to listen to, because we're all attuned to, you know, who knew what VARS was, right? No, nobody.
Yeah, I never, you know, knew, nobody knew what VARS was.
But now everybody knows what it is and knows where to get the data, and you can see that.
Well, so maybe we've become a little religious ourselves, because I'll say, just for me, this is something I tell people pretty regularly. You know, I got all my vaccines as a kid. I was in the Marines. In the Marines, you get a lot of vaccines. Mm-hmm. I traveled out of the country for work, so you got to get vaccines to do that. All of my kids as of March 2020 were fully on schedule. Every single one of them. I never would have ever questioned vaccines. And since March 2020, not a single one of our kids has gotten a vaccine, and we've had more kids since then. So for me, maybe it is religious too, that I just feel like I do not trust this system anymore. That's the simple fact. It's not, I'm not sitting here thinking, does this vaccine make sense? Does that vaccine make sense? I'm just simply like, you guys blew it. You blew it. You lost my trust. You lost me. I can't play in the sandbox with you anymore because of everything you did for these 2 years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think more so than religion, it's knowledge, right? What you got was knowledge, where you just had maybe blind trust that, well, exactly, everyone's doing this and it's correct. But now that you understand the facts behind the vaccine, and also, you know, the cumulative effect of so many of the bad decisions, the notion that we have completely ignored this thing called natural immunity or infection acquired immunity. There was a video of Dr. Fauci that surfaced, I guess, about a month ago, and it's probably 15 years old. You can kind of tell from, you know, his age. But he literally says that natural infection is the best inoculation, way better than vaccine, right? Mm-hmm. And did the science change from 15 years ago? Absolutely not. It's his political view is now changing. So that immediately you lose trust, right? The emails that came out through the FOIA request, where he said in the beginning of the pandemic, he responded to a woman that, no, you shouldn't really be wearing a mask. They're not necessary. And then 2 weeks later, he's out saying you have to wear a mask. Yeah. So that, you know, I think it's good for people to have that inherent trust, but then it's very easy. And I think that's the most that's will be the most long-lasting negative impact of the pandemic, is that the public has lost trust in the establishments that we should be trusting. But there's, you know, there's been this media push and government push that, oh, you know, vaccine is going to be the savior for everything. And I'm not anti-vaccine at all. I'm informed, right? Give me the information and let me decide.
That's why I always preface the story I gave with, like, my kids were all fully vaccinated in March of 2020. I've probably had 50 vaccines in my life. You can't call me anti-vax. Right. I'm sorry, but you don't get to do that. Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But we still have a reality to deal with, which is they done messed up, AA Ron. Like, this has been a weird couple of years, and I just don't trust you.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure to get one more question in before we get out of here. Your involvement with the schools fight, something that I think is unique, and we've talked all about, like, this data, the various conversations we've had, and that aspect we've connected on. Another part we connect on is we're dads in the fight, the males in the fight. Why do you think that when it comes to fighting for school normalcy and this COVID hysteria and stuff, when it comes to the schools, it's like all moms? What's going on with that?
So that's a very astute observation. I think there's a lot to unpack and an answer there. You know, I think we don't bear children as men, right? So, you know, we're there and we participate, but I think that there's just something innate. There's actually a couple of graphics. There's one of a woman with a shield, and she's being pelted with arrows, and then her baby's underneath the shield. You know, she's shielding the baby from the arrows, and the baby looks very peaceful, doesn't even know what's going on. And there's another one where there's a big lioness, and the cub is beneath her. And I think that there's just something innate within women, you know, potentially, I guess, due to childbirth. I don't know. I can't be sure. But when I think there's a certain amount of abuse that kids can take from the government and from teachers and from administration and from school boards in general. But then there's a line. And when that line's crossed, mothers will do whatever is necessary to protect their children, right? That's their offspring. So I think that's what you're seeing, is that, you know, whether it was the virtual learning, or, you know, kids who wanted to make a choice about masks and got suspended, or you know, deprived of their free and public education, or, you know, the mandates of having to, you know, to make your kids get a vaccine that they don't need. I think that's where moms drew the line. And I think that's why you see so many moms really getting involved and being so passionate. You know, you have Moms for Liberty. There's chapters all over the place for that. You have moms who are coming up. I mean, it just blew me away, honestly. You know, these are parents and moms that you normally see at the playground or, you know, out in town. And now they're up and getting up in front of a school board.
Yeah.
Right. And addressing them and shouting them down and, you know, really advocating for their children. So to me, that's one of the silver linings of this, is that parents, moms and dads have all gotten involved, or very active, and they're starting to see what's going on. So whether it's, you know, questionable books, whether it's introduction of sexuality in the lower elementary grades, parents are now awake and they're paying attention. And school boards have taken notice of that. But yeah, it's been really interesting to see the distribution.
Yeah. We have the Reopen group is about 2/3 women, just in general. So that's always kind of fascinated me. I don't know why. I mean, Facebook is slightly more female than male, but not nearly that much.
Right.
So there's definitely an aspect of, like, the Reopen movement in general is a little bit more amenable to women, I guess. Yeah. And in the school setting, I can totally understand everything you're saying. Like, these are every one of them I know who is really fighting hard. These are mama bears.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
It's really instincts kicking in, which I can't blame guys. Like, we're not great on the instincts front, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hey, thanks so much for being a part of Reopen Bucks. Thanks for being one of the dads in the trenches. Definitely appreciate it.
And yeah, we're some of the few.
I know, not enough.
Yeah.
But all right, we'll catch up with you later, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.